I can honestly say I'll miss flying the 7.5 once the type becomes obsolete. It's really around the corner at this point, sadly. I mean, there's a bunch of 7.5 freighters, though, which will likely be around for a while. Last fall, we moved a 7.5 freighter from Phoenix, Arizona to Tashkent, Uzbekistan. I dragged the camera gear around because this one had the makings of a cockpit casual, which it will become. The trip, routine for us by any measure technically, was one that I wanted to do. For one, I like flying the pencil, if I'm being honest, and I've flown this particular aircraft 2 years prior into cargo conversion in Xiamen, China with our friend Neil, who had passed away shortly after we flew it. Neil's name was the last entry in the logbook. Anyway, the main reason was because it was going to Uzbekistan, a place I'd never been, and I really had no idea what to expect. I'm glad that I brought the cameras, because this place was fascinating, and Bob and I spent the day walking around the city most of the time with the cameras rolling. At one point, we sat down to lunch at this famous plov joint. Plov is the local specialty. It's basically rice and meat and chickpeas, fat, some other vegetables. Anyway, always looking to grab B-roll, I pulled the camera out over lunch, and I started randomly filming. I, in my typical harassing manner, decided to ask Bob how he felt about being a social media influencer. And the result was this long lunch conversation that deserves better than the cutting room floor from an episode of Cockpit Casual. We were sitting in the outdoor tables at Besh Kozan, that on some maps is called the International Plov Center. It was October, and it was sunny and warm.
Are you excited for some plov?
I am. It was interesting. So we just had the waiter come over and explain the menu.
Why don't you give us the lowdown?
Yeah, so this is a mixed grill, basically lamb and beef. This was lamb only, beef only. Or maybe one that was spicy. And then, well, here we go. Here's some bread.
Perfect.
Okay, I guess one medium Coke. We have, what do we drink out of it?
I don't know. Is this a
cup for the...
Yeah, everyone else is drinking out of those.
Oh, okay. Well, when in Uzbekistan, we do as Uzbekistan. Uzbeks.
All right.
Yeah, so, and back to the menu. The menu basically mixed or separate different meats.
What kind of meats?
So, we came back here, you get a small or large, and you can get standard or the deluxe. The deluxe has horse meat. So, if you want the full ride, you get the horse meat mixed grill. We opted not to do the horse meat. I've probably eaten horse meat before, probably in France or somewhere, but unknowingly, and I really don't want to eat any horse. Got some good bread. Bread looks amazing. Got the ovens going in there.
Big bagel, tomato salad.
Yeah. Oh yeah, tomatoes. Wow.
Yeah, I ordered salad, man.
Really good. That's a salad.
Yeah, do it.
And Coke.
I'll have a bowl of Coke.
Yigtinen, as it's called here.
Or maybe you know how Coke puts like people's names on them. Maybe that's what that is.
Yiggy Tim.
Maybe
Yiggy
someone,
Tim.
That's someone's name.
I want to meet Yiggy Tim.
Yeah, like they say Bob.
Oh, they do. I can get a Bob Coke.
You could.
I haven't seen that yet, but so if these are the cups, what do you do in regards to a plate?
Well, the whole thing comes out in a plate, a giant plate.
Oh, I thought this would be like an appetizer thing, like...
No, man.
Start eating it.
Just start eating. Just fucking eat.
I need a drink. I don't think I've ever used a bowl as a cup. But it works fine.
Oh, here it comes, man.
Oh, wow, it was fast.
Mm. It's possible.
Oh, wow. Let's see. Try a little bit of this horse meat.
You didn't get the horse meat.
I think they put it in anyway.
I think they gave you only horse meat.
Actually, if that's horse meat, I'm probably going to keep eating horse meat. I think it's lamb, though. Mm. Whatever kind of meat it is, it's good.
And I want to try some of this myself here. Mm. It's just a tomato and onion salad.
Yeah. It is good.
All right, plov me. Hmm. Fuck yeah, man. Oh my God. It really truly is like, it's like biryani, you know?
Uh-huh.
But like, without Indian spices, it's different. Hmm. This is like chickpeas. Fatty beef, lamb. Very good, man.
And the yellow, what is the yellow? Something cut up. It's kind of sweet.
I don't know. I like it, though.
Yeah.
So much for my diet.
Yeah. Well, one day won't kill you.
No.
Well, it might.
It might.
Depending on how this works out.
I'm not going to be eating on Asiana later.
I rarely eat on airplanes anymore.
So there's like legitimately pieces of fat.
In here?
Yeah. What do you think of the fact that you're an aviation influencer, Bob? God.
That sounds cringy, actually.
It's so cringy.
I do not want to be an aviation influencer.
Why don't you take off your shirt right now?
Look at me. I forgot my uniform today. God, man.
It's cringy as fuck.
There's
isn't
so
it?
Much cringy stuff out there. It's it's funny because, you know, I mean, we've been doing this for what, like 5 or 6 years now?
Yeah, maybe more.
And
Casual was 2020, so yeah, 5 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I started doing like the TikToks and stuff in 2019. But anyway, and you know, it's funny, it just kind of caught on. It was surprising to me because that's what I've been doing for, you know, just this part of it for 25 years and flying for almost 43 now. So it was something that I didn't think it didn't seem that interesting. I mean, it was interesting to me because I love what I do, but I didn't think anybody else would care about it.
Yeah.
So going out there and doing it and showing people what I do was just that. There was no, like, look at me, I'm an airline pilot, or, you know, or look at me in this, you know, business jet, this private jet. Oh, I fly private and I'm a private, you know, jet pilot, you know, and drive it up in my Ferrari or something. Yeah.
Well, it doesn't hurt that our jet kind of looks like a fucking like steamroller.
Yeah.
Like a fucking combine tractor.
Yeah. Yeah, to me, it's a cool-looking jet, but to most, I don't think they exactly look at the West Wind and go, wow, it's a really cool-looking airplane.
Yeah.
But whatever. I don't know. The whole influencer thing, I can't stand that word. I don't think either one of us want to be an influencer. We just, you know, I mean, people are entertained by what we do.
Yeah.
They find it interesting that we fly all these different types of airplanes, which is unusual. Our job is unusual. Our company, very unusual. So it's fun to show people, you know, that part of things. I hope it motivates people in some way to go out and do their own thing.
They do. There's a lot of people that are like, you know, you guys have inspired me to, you know, go get my private, or, you know, like, I was just a private pilot, but now I kind of want to do this professionally. I didn't really ever think of that there was anything outside of the airlines.
Yeah.
You know, there's really not. You got to kind of make your own thing.
You know, well, I mean, that's what it is. I mean, you know, over the last, you know, 4 or 5 years, it's been this whole pilot mill thing, this mentality of, oh, just, you know, go to flight school, you know, get your ratings as fast as possible. Next thing, you're going to be a rich airline pilot.
Yeah.
And that's what the mentality of it is. But the reality of it is, especially, you know, these days and probably going into the future, it's going to be, well, you can go get your ratings, but you're going to have to find a way to go build time. The airline thing is not going to be immediate. You know, it might be several years down the road, if not a decade down the road, before you're going into the airline thing, if that's what you want to do. But the big thing is there's so many other things that you can do. You need to get, you know, people need to get creative out there and go find these other jobs. And I think they'll find that it's exciting. The airlines are boring.
Yeah.
The most boring jobs I've ever had were the airline jobs.
Yeah.
Not to say that there's anything wrong with having an airline job. Look, there's a lot of stability in all of that. And there's a lot of instability in aviation, you know, with all the other types of jobs. But I don't know. You know, I got into this because it was adventurous.
Keep going. I'm just getting some of the scenery, man. Yeah, unfortunately, that's based
on. I started flying because I wanted to go, you know, run around the world on adventures. And so all of the jobs I ever had was looking at the adventure side of that job, not the money, not the long-term side of it. I mean, originally, you know, I wasn't thinking long-term anyway. When I first started flying, I was a teenager and didn't care about, you know, what happened in the future. I just cared about, like, you know, having fun now and, like, looking for adventure, seeing the world. And I've never matured since then. So, I still have that mentality. But you know, if there's anything that I influence, I hope it's that.
Yeah.
That, you know, go out there and live for the adventure of flying. Who cares about the career part? So. Oh, man.
Besh Kuzan.
So, like, I couldn't leave that completely sight unseen.
No.
It was like having lunch with us.
No, it's too long for, like, a cockpit casual episode, but yeah, no, that's good. I mean, it does. It feels like, you know, somebody's sitting there with us listening to my, you know, babble on and on about, you know, my terrible career advice to people.
Don't do it for the money. Do it for the adventure.
Yeah. You don't need a future. Forget about the future. Just go have fun.
Exactly. Well, you know, well, have fun. That's an important part of it.
I don't know. It's what I've always done. I haven't.
So anyway, yeah, it was good, man. I mean, that lunch was awesome.
The lunch was great. It probably was horse meat, though. But
it might have been. I've had horse meat before. I had horse meat in Yakutsk. I had baby horse meat, full, against my will. I mean, I didn't know.
Because you were starving to death?
No, I mean, it was served and I ate it. Then I found out what it was. But, you know, anyway, that was a fun little clip. I don't know.
Yeah, it was cool. I hope people enjoy it. I'm looking forward to the comments and feedback. Yeah.
But anyway, so it's Thursday night. Talk about last minute. I mean, we're kind of shoestringing this thing together. And so we don't have a guest tonight, on this pod. It's just going to be us rambling about a couple things. I have a couple things I want to cover on the agenda. We'll do a side shtick. And then I have a backlog of user questions. And so the backside of this, episode is going to be addressing all those. I've got some videos. I've got some audios, questions, and we'll tackle them.
I haven't read any of them or heard any of them, so
me either.
They'll be just coming straight at me. That's the way I like to do them anyway.
Yeah, actually, I've watched them all and listened to them all, but it was like 2 weeks ago. So, Yeah, it's, I don't remember. So we're going to be starting fresh. I have no notes. We're going to go through the questions and it's going to be, I just got back from Passover Seder. It is Passover tonight. Happy Easter to my Goyim friends. And, happy Passover. Is that what you say? I'm a bad Jew.
I don't know. I was actually going to ask you, do you say happy Passover? I'm not sure. I just learned what Passover actually is like yesterday.
Can you explain it to me? I'll tell you what you say, because I got a text from Brian Segee the other day, as always. He always, such a great guy, man. He always texts me. I don't remember.
Well, I saw him at Eistat. I don't know if I told you that. We hung out a little
bit. Yeah, Shanatova or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
There was something that he always says to me. He always texts me on the high holidays and checks in. Just, he happened to find out that I'm Jewish by birth.
I also found that out, that if you're Jewish by your mother, if your mother's Jewish, then it, that's how it trickles down, I guess.
Yeah, my mother's Benoff. My mother's Jewish. I grew up in a Jewish household, but not a very practicing household. We did the high holidays, went to temple for that stuff. My grandparents were kind of like, keep it alive. You know, we always had like the family gather. It's always been about family. That's what the religion is to me, is family gatherings and being with the people that you love and care about.
Well, there's some cool traditions. I mean, that's what, you know, you've kind of told me a little bit about some of your old traditions a little bit. And this business colleague of mine, we were on the phone, we ended up talking for about an hour about it all. And he was, you know, he's not like a, you know, like a full practicing Jew. But I mean, that's what his family is, and he grew up in that, and so they still practice all of it. Very similar to you, and but he was telling me about, I don't know, he was telling me about finger puppets and stuff that had to do with the plagues or something.
Oh God! So he did like that. So we kind of do like a child Seder too, like, so a real Seder. It's long, and we used to have those when I was a kid. My grandparents went all out when there was, you know, 20, 30 people at the house for Seder. And endless readings, Hebrew, the song singing and telling the same stories each time. And I'm not going to go through it all, but I couldn't, to be honest. I mean,
it was Christmas enough.
Hanukkah's not even a major holiday. You know,
really?
Hanukkah essentially was put in place so that the Jewish kids would have something to look forward to with presents, I think.
It is all very interesting. I find it interesting. You know, I mean, I grew up in the Mormon church. I mean, so, you know, in a very religious household and a very religious, strict upbringing.
Look how well that worked out for you.
And then I went to the airport.
The Church of Planes.
Exactly. Then I found my real religion in aviation.
We generally host most of the holidays around here for my family and friends and everything. But this year we went over there, which is great. No cleanup for me. I mean, it helped a little bit, but my shoulder was bothering me, so I didn't know.
What an excuse. I had surgery. I can't cook and clean.
Man, I had a rough PT session today. But anyway, we just had dinner. I made matzo ball soup. I make a great matzo ball. I'm a sinker guy. You ever hear the sinker versus floater debate? You ever had a matzo ball?
No, I've never had a matzo ball.
Matzo balls are good.
There's all kinds of food associated with this Seder, isn't it?
Yeah, well, like most of the food that is associated with the Seder is kind of, there's like a plate with like things that symbolize things. There's like bitter herbs and the salt water and the haroset and all that. But no, like as far as, I guess we kind of always eat the same sort of stuff. It was a variety tonight. So we had brisket, but not like Texas brisket, like Jewish brisket. It's different. It's good in its own way.
Wasn't pork, right?
No, it was not pork. It was a beef brisket. We had gefilte fish. Have you ever had gefilte fish?
No.
So picture like a cold meatloaf made of like carp.
I'm going back to the horse meat.
I like gefilte fish. I don't know why, man. The key to eating gefilte fish and enjoying it is a ton of horseradish, like the red beet horseradish is the best way to do it. And then, so a matzo ball is a dumpling. It's just like a, it's like a massive ball. It can be really a good matzo ball is big. It's made out of matzo meal, which is basically like ground up matzo and some flour, some eggs. And my key ingredient, I make them with schmaltz. And schmaltz is chicken fat, rendered chicken fat.
Oh.
Gives it a lot of good deep flavor. So, and I like a sinker. I like a dense, heavy matzo ball. So there are people that prefer a floater, and a floater floats to the top of the soup. I guess the key to that is either baking soda or club soda or something like that to get some air into it. I don't like light matzo balls. I want a belly bomb.
What, so and, what, I mean, is it doughy? Is it a doughy thing or?
It's, I gotta make you one, man. Yeah, kind of doughy, like squishy, like, I don't know, like wet bread, but chickeny. It's just good. Yeah. You would like it. This is something that you would like. It's chicken soup. There's no stuff in it. It's just broth, dill, a lot of dill, and a matzo ball.
Yeah. And, yeah. Well, this friend of mine, Daniel, who was explaining this on the phone, was talking about it so much that I was actually like looking on my phone trying to find Jewish restaurants. I'm like, man, I wonder if I could just like go to one of these seders at a restaurant and like get this food.
A seder is about the prayer and the experience of the family. The food is kind of secondary, but not for us. Like for us, it is about the meal. There's a great Israeli restaurant in Philly called Zahav. So next time you're here, if I know in advance long enough, I might be able to get us a reservation. It's hard to get into.
Really?
It's amazing. It's like one of the top restaurants in Philly. It has been for years.
Mm.
But that's the closest you're going to get.
Yeah. Well, I love food from that area of the world, you know. I mean, Lebanese, Israeli, just that, you know, kind of Mediterranean, Middle Eastern, you know, kind of a mix. A
lot of similarities, man. I mean, the religion's different. The food's very similar.
Right.
That's what you get, right? That's what you get in that region.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was my dinner. I'm still undigested here. And what's going on in the aviation world? Well, I received a message that United Airlines has decimated their points system. Some big changes.
Oh, in what way? Because we have a lot of United points.
We do, man. The changes look like they've come to generally penalize non-United Airlines credit card holders. So it's like a card holder first model. So here's the basics. General members, the non-card holders, the losers, according to the article that I read.
That would be us.
That would be us. I have American cards. Maybe I'll just cancel my American cards and just get United Mileage Plus card.
Yeah, I might have to get one. Continue on and I'll vent my frustrations.
The rate dropped 5 miles to 3 miles per dollar for non-card holders. But I guess you don't have to buy it with the card. But if you're a card holder, it's attached to your account. It looks like that's what it looks like to me. You go from 5 to 3 on the accrual, which is bad. That's reason enough right there to get the card, I guess. We're not advertising this card, by the way. Don't get it. I don't. Wait, we're not hawking cards here.
Not until we get on the affiliate program, that is.
Right. Yeah. If they want to pay it, if they want to pay me to say that it's good, then I'll do it. But no, actually, on the contrary, I'm not taking any. We're not entertaining any sponsors that aren't relevant or that we can't really get behind. So if we do start taking sponsors at some point, know that we will be getting behind them.
We use those services or products, or we like it.
We don't have any of those yet, though. So
no,
we should.
We're open to it.
So anyway, Premier Silver rate dropped from 7 miles to 5. Premier Gold Platinum 1K, that's us, all tiers saw a 2 mile per dollar decrease in the base. Ugh.
Wow.
Now, the card holders now earn more miles just for having an open account, regardless of whether they use that card to pay for the flight. General members with a card earn 6 miles per dollar, higher than the previous 5. Premier 1K with a card earn 12 miles per dollar. For just having the card, and up to 17 if they also pay with the United card.
Well, we might as well get a card and whether we use it or not.
It sounds like they're, I guess, you know, maybe they're anticipating a reduction in travel and saying, you know, people get the United credit card is going to be rewarded better because that's how they'll make ancillary revenues.
I guess, you know, I'm sure that, you know, they've, you know, gone through it and figured out the financials on all this stuff. But gosh, it sure seems like a terrible idea to like piss off your people that are, you know, paying your airline millions of dollars, you know, for business class travel for their entire company.
And attach it to having a credit card, you know?
Yeah.
I will definitely be canceling another credit card. I am not in the business of racking up lots of credit cards. It's just, I don't like doing it. I have a couple that I use, and those are the ones I use. So, I mean, I guess I don't really fly American much anymore. I can drop those cards and pick up a United one, I guess. But I don't know, man. It's kind of annoying.
It really is. It's very annoying. And I don't know. Just the whole airline business just leaves a bad taste in my mouth.
Yeah.
As well, I talked about before.
So on that front, man, things are not, you know, the price of oil is still well over $100 a barrel.
Yeah. I mean, I'm hearing about, you know, airports and entire countries, you know, having shortages of Jet A. You know, I think it was it Australia that was talking about, you know, having to maybe ration Jet A.
I didn't have any time to read the news this week.
But. Yeah, I just kind of just briefly heard that, or maybe read it somewhere. I didn't really look into the article to see how legit it was. But you know, I've also heard about airlines that are going to cut back a lot of the kind of regional flights.
Yeah,
you know, stuff that doesn't have very good load factors. They're just going to cut it out to try to conserve fuel.
Yeah. Well, we quoted some trips this week. Actually, it's been a busy week with requests. We'll see if they pay dividends and come to fruition. But I think I quoted at least a dozen trips this week. And one of them was a series of A330s coming out of storage in Teruel, Spain. Did you happen to see the fuel price in Teruel?
Yeah. So it's always insane there. But
no, this is
but now it's
next
like,
level insane.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
1870 a gallon or something, 1890, I don't remember.
Yeah.
A gallon.
It's wild. I mean,
so for an A330, yeah, for an A330, we're looking at, I mean, the airplane's going to South America, you know, we're looking at almost like $400,000 in fuel.
Just in fuel. I mean, we got to hope that by the time those ferries actually happen, that things stabilize and come back down. But
well, we have a workaround too. I mean, we're still gonna have to take some gas there, but I mean, like, we're looking at stopping, I think, in Casablanca.
Yeah, we figured out how to save them money. So, yeah, you know,
anyway, it's ugly. Even the places that we were paying $250 $290 a month ago are now $4 or $5 bucks.
It's $5 a gallon, you know, almost everywhere now that we're looking at. If not, you know, $6 or $7.
Yeah.
In the United States, and the U.S. was always, you know, we're paying what, $2.53 a gallon or something, maybe $3.50. But yeah, it's definitely $5 now.
We're over $4 for premium. My cars take premium, so I, you know, I'm stuck with that. And
I'm $6 out here in Arizona.
Six.
$6 a gallon for the premium stuff.
Oh, well, at least they pump it for us here in Jersey.
Yeah, I got to go out and do my own.
It's felt like Arizona here the last couple of days. It's been like 75 degrees, man.
Really? Finally heated up, huh?
Well, it's cold tonight, but yesterday it was like in the 70s, like mid 70s.
Yeah, it's been nice out here all week. It's been just perfect.
Yeah, we're going to have a good weekend. I think I'm going to go to the beach this weekend, check it out, bring the dogs. Yeah.
Yeah, get the beach house stuff going again.
Yeah, man. So you got anything else to add before we get into side shtick?
No, not really. I think that pretty much covers the week. I've been, you know, just knee deep in AI, man. Looking at
what do you mean?
The AI. Just I started messing around with Claude and building out websites after actually you started talking about it.
Because I used Claude to help build out. Well, help. I helped Claude build out cockpitcasual.com, which is now online.
Yeah, and y'all got to check it out. It's unreal what Steve was able to build using Claude. I mean,
it took 2 days.
Only 2 days.
Only two days. I know. I got to do our nomadic website with it next. But basically, I just said what I kind of wanted it to look like. I mean, there's some things that I had to do, like it's got like a video background, and I grabbed some awesome footage of us walking around the boneyard, and I pasted it together in a 20-second loop, which of course took like 3 hours, but I'm a perfectionist, you know, to get the motion blur right. And like the,
it looks, like, slow it to looks 80%. Unbelievable. It looks like, you know, some $50,000 or $100,000, you know, web team built it.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Built by AI, and like it's great. You just kind of like drag and drop the files into like boom, 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 and it just it's like magic.
It really is. It's just, I've been going down some rabbit holes with it. You know, it was going to help with productivity with me personally. It will certainly help the company.
Can we start firing people soon?
You better be careful saying that.
I'm just kidding. No, I don't think it's going to replace, like, because the people that we're so lean, man. I mean, like, we have a dozen employees.
So much. I mean, look, AI is definitely not in the headspace that our dispatcher Mark is in.
Thank God.
Or it may never be.
Sorry, Mark.
And
he doesn't listen, does he?
I don't know. But I mean, this is the thing. Nobody else could do that job.
No.
I mean, he
not even
is,
another dispatcher.
No. I mean, this is the thing. It's just like, it's just unbelievable what he knows and just his thought process in getting things done. Sometimes it makes us a little bit crazy, but at the end of the day, he's usually right.
Yeah. No, he is. He's like, I compare him to like almost like a lawyer in that, you know how your lawyer is always the buzzkill?
Yeah.
You want to do something and then your lawyer's like, no, you can't do that.
Yeah. No, this is the way it's supposed to be done. And we go, well, just do it anyway. Well, no, you know, you're going to get in trouble.
I know. He keeps us out of trouble.
He really does. He really does. So as do all, pretty much everybody at Nomadic keeps Steve and I out of trouble.
Especially Mark and especially Christina, our lawyer.
Yeah, Christina, definitely. Definitely. There's a lot of head shaking and eye rolling on her part.
Yes, she's a very patient woman.
But if you get Steve and I together, we will go down some bad paths together.
as you probably already know if you're listening to the pod.
Yeah, exactly. We will talk each other into some bad decisions.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stories of those over the years too.
Like having a weekly podcast. But anyway, check out cockpitcasual.com. It's if you're a diehard, you already know a lot of the stuff, but it's still worth looking at. It's cool. It's an example of what you can do with AI.
Yeah, absolutely.
In 2 days. And there's some sponsor pitch deck, not really a pitch deck, just some like a preliminary early stage sponsored card on there. If you do have an aviation related business or travel related or something like that, we are going to start actively looking for sponsors. I didn't think we would be at the point where we're doing that for several months, but all combined sources, month one, check this out, Bob, 133,000 views across all the platforms.
Wow.
In our first month in five episodes.
And just the podcasts?
Just the podcasts, but wow. That includes the YouTube version, which is by far like the strongest. Spotify second. Spotify's getting like between 5,000 and 7,000. Apple's a bit less, like 1,000 or 2,000 a week, but that's like a week per week for each of these platforms. YouTube's getting like 10, 15, sometimes 20. And then they keep going on YouTube too. But the real impressive thing is like the duration, like people are listening for the whole thing. You know, Apple's was like 80%.
Wow.
That's crazy. Like the average, I think, is 49.
Wow. Yeah. I listen to podcasts like probably 5, maybe 10 minutes at a time.
So anyway, thanks to all the viewers, listeners, you guys rock. Very happy with how this thing has been performing so far, and we owe it to you. So anyway, cockpitcasual.com. Check it out. Bob, you have a side shtick this week. So let's do it.
All right.
Should we do side shtick? Is there going to be music for it? Cue the music for side shtick.
So here it is. If you could fly with any celebrity pilot that is known to be an aviator, who would it be and why?
That's a tough one, man. My gut tells me to say Harrison Ford, just because I respect the guy's acting. I love him. I mean, he's awesome. He seems like a good dude. I don't know. Maybe he's not. He seems like a good dude. But I hesitate to say that because hasn't he crashed a couple times?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, he's like crashed several times. I mean, he's walked away every time.
Yeah. I don't know how he's got to be getting up there in age. I mean, I assume he's still got a medical and still goes out and flies, but I mean, he would be a cool one.
Hold on. Let me give you a better answer. Then my second thought, because I'm on the spot here. I didn't know what you were coming up with for side shtick. Okay.
Yeah.
My second thought would be Nathan Fielder, but of course I've already done that and I could do that almost any time. You know,
that's what I thought your go-to was going to be we've actually already done it.
We've done it several times. And why he's fun to fly with. I mean, he knows what he's doing for the most part, you know, so that's good. But like, you know, any celebrity pilot, I don't know, maybe I go Sully and I start asking about
if he did listen to that music.
If he listened to the music, if he breastfed into adulthood.
If nobody understands what we're talking about, go watch season 2 of The Rehearsal.
All these people have already seen that. If they're watching our show, they've watched
The Rehearsal. I would assume so, but
I mean, we're credited on it. Come on.
Yeah.
If you didn't, you should.
Yeah. We're actually on it. We're in some scenes. So
yeah, you know,
our claim to fame.
Actually, the finale of episode, you know, see, episode 6 is the finale. That's the one that we worked on for a long time. And the closing scenes of the finale were shot through my FX3 cameras because he was talking about his time flying for us.
That's right. You did a lot of work on a lot of those scenes.
There was even a scene where I didn't know I was in it. There's a scene where he's on the phone by the pool looking for a 737. Yeah. That was a real call that I was having with him about when we were trying to locate a 737. I had no clue that that was being filmed.
Really?
You can hear my voice.
You didn't know you were being recorded. Huh?
I didn't.
Oh my
God. So anyway, I've digressed. I'm going to say Sully, man. That's my celeb pilot.
Yeah, and is he considered a celeb at this point?
Yeah, he's like the most famous pilot in the world, besides Captain Bob
or Chuck Yeager or something. But I'm Chuck thinking, Yeager. Yeah. So
dead,
I mean,
isn't he? He's dead.
He is. Bob Hoover.
Bob Hoover's definitely dead.
I don't know. I can't keep track anymore.
Orville Wright, the original celebrity pilot.
So Wilbur. I'm going to go full scale. Actual real celebrity, like actor celebrity, and go with Tom Cruise.
Oh, I forgot he's a pilot.
He's done some really cool flying.
Yeah.
You know,
and you'd feel tall next to him.
Yeah, exactly. We'd be kind of probably like the same height, maybe.
No, you're taller.
We'd all both right, be so, wearing boots.
So give me more. Why would Tom Cruise be your guy?
It seems that he like gets way into these roles, to the nth degree. Great actor, and so I'm gonna assume that carries over into flying. That he's probably way into it, very knowledgeable, and probably highly skilled. And he has a lot of different airplanes. I mean, he's got like, I think he's got a P-51.
Yeah,
which would be like unbelievably cool to go out and fly.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just think that, you know, he would be a good pilot. I think I'd feel safe with him flying around with him.
Yeah.
And I think I would get along with him.
Harrison Ford.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, Harrison Ford.
And you know, and he's got some, he's got cool planes.
He does. So did you know, what was that one where he was Barry Seal flying the Aerostar?
Yeah, exactly. So American Made.
American Made. So he flew that airplane quite a bit during the filming of the movie. And interesting story that, so I, you know, I'm an Aerostar guy. I had an Aerostar 600 for years. Selling it was a very regretful decision because I'd like to buy another one. I loved that airplane. That movie obviously, you know, hit me because it's, you know, that airplane is prominently featured. Well, the airplane that was used in that movie crashed during the filming of that movie.
Well, I didn't know that.
Yeah, in Colombia. It was a 600. I want to say it was serial. It was very close to mine. It was somewhere between 10 and like 16 or something. It was a 69 600, which I had a 69 600. Mine was serial number 13. So when that plane crashed, they hadn't finished filming. So they actually used two different aircraft in the filming of American Made. And sadly, it was a fatal crash. So the pilots.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So the pilots perished, crashed into a mountain, low level scud running down the mountains. You know, Colombia is unbelievably mountainous.
Yeah.
And they slammed into the side. Fortunately, Tom Cruise was not on board for that because they had regular stunt pilots and Tom Cruise flew some of the scenes himself. But that aircraft actually crashed. And when the team was looking for a replacement aircraft to finish filming, it had to be a 600. It had to essentially look as close as possible to the original aircraft. And the previous owner of my aircraft, a guy by the name of Ed, was asked, he was the guy that I bought the airplane from. He was asked if my old aircraft 600 Echo Delta could be used. And they came out and they looked at it and they determined that it wasn't really a great fit because it had some upgraded avionics that were not true to the period. And he didn't want to swap out into old avionics and swap back.
Yeah.
So it was not used, but my former aircraft could have been used.
That would have been cool, man.
Yeah. The 600 is a hell of a machine, by the way.
Yeah.
I love that thing. But if I buy another one, it'll be either a Superstar 700 if I can afford it, which I can't at the moment, but maybe a 602P. The 602P is a good bird.
Oh, yeah. Is that pressurized?
Yeah. The 601P, 602P are pressurized. So any Aerostar, we're totally digressing on this, but any Aerostar that is pressurized. So there's basically two versions of airframe. There's the non-pressurized version and there's the pressurized version. Any pressurized Aerostar, 601P, 602P, can be turned into a Superstar 700 with the Machin mods. Mm. And the type certificate for Aerostar was purchased from Piper by a company called AAC, Aerostar Aircraft Corp. And they manufacture every part for that airplane currently. I mean, they're not cheap, but anything that you need for an Aerostar can be bought new from AAC, including the Machin upgrades. Yeah.
I had no idea.
So you could put any engine variant of the IO-540, TSIO, regular. I just had straight IO-540 G1B5s on mine, which were the old motors. There's the K1J5 is the preferred 600, IO-540 K1J5, I think. But there's, you know, you get into the turbocharged and intercooled ones and the pressure, you know, they could be put onto the 601P, 602P. I think the 602P has the intercooler. There's a bunch of different variants, right? But you can upgrade the exhaust, everything like VG kits, and you can turn it into a Superstar 700, which is the fastest piston twin you could buy.
Really? Wow. Yeah. Like how fast?
So it's 700 because it's 350 horsepower side. So 700 horsepower, right, on the airplane. Yeah. They true out at like, I guess between 19 and 24, the true out at like 240-ish, 240, 250 neighborhood, I think. I might be, if someone knows, you know, you can correct
Somebody will correct you.
Yeah. But my 600 normally aspirated, non-pressurized, you know, it was still a 200 knot airplane. I mean, it could do 205 at like 80%, which, you know, you don't run it at 85 lean a peak, but I would run it at 75% and get like 199 to 202 true.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
At 8,000 feet at 28 gallons an hour.
Wow. Total, yeah. 28 total.
Total, 14 aside. Yeah.
Man, that's not bad at all.
I mean, I could even lean it, you know, you get up to 10, you could lean it down to about 13, 8 aside. A little too lean maybe, but 28 is kind of econ cruise. You just, I mean, 200 knots at econ cruise, man. I mean, it's better than a Baron in every respect.
Yeah. Well, it's such a sleek machine and those little thin wings. There's not much drag to it, that's for sure.
No. And it's a tiny little rudder, too, which means that it has very poor low speed single engine handling characteristics. You cannot get slow in that airplane. You will kill yourself.
Yeah. That airplane is a handful. I mean, it's killed a lot of people over the years.
Well, you know, Bob, you know, once we get rid of this Westwind, I know we want a turboprop, but I'm telling you, a Superstar 700 might be, I mean, you can get a really nice one for about 400K. If you want a partner.
We might have to look into it.
I know of one. I kind of want another Aerostar, honestly, man. And a 700 would be awesome. I mean, it's a six-seater. It's really a five-seater. You take out one, it's tight in there. But that's why it's fast.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it goes a long way. You get an aux tank. They have winglets.
We'll get one. Maybe Tom Cruise will come fly with you in it.
Shit, man. If that happens.
The offer is there, Tom. You could come fly any of our airplanes.
I wish Tom listened. Maybe someday he will.
Maybe. And all Harrison right,
well,
Ford.
I think we didn't run a timer. We did side shtick. It turned into an Aerostar discussion, but that's what happens on Cockpit Casual.
Definitely.
We can't be pinned to a subject.
We cannot stay focused for the sake of the show.
Well, let's do some listener questions, eh?
Yeah. I wish we were like one of those old time talk shows where people would actually call in live.
No.
It's so cool.
But we need a staff to be our bleep.
We'd have to have them on a delay. Yeah.
Let's get started with the questions. This one is coming from Andrea.
Hi, Steve and Bob. My name is Andrea. I'm originally from Italy, but I've lived in Los Angeles, California for the last 15, 17 years. I just had a quick question. I've been following Cockpit Casual for a while and started following the podcast. I was just curious. I don't think I ever heard you guys explain how you two met. I'm always curious to understand how people meet. So if you guys wouldn't mind talking about that, it's always fascinating to me. And then wanted to thank you for the content you guys put out. It's very fascinating. It's very entertaining. I also would like to know which one is your favorite city to travel to, whether it's for work or not for work.
Bob, you go first about the. Let's answer the city question, and then I'll answer the how we met.
The whole romantic how we met version, you know, I get asked this all the time. What's my favorite city? Where do I like to travel to? And I can never answer it, because just like airplanes, people ask me what's my favorite airplane. I can't pin one down. I love variety. I love the variety of all the different places that we go. I love the variety of all the different airplanes we fly. And so much about a city or a destination depends on the weather. The time of year makes all the difference in the world.
It does.
And man, I just, you know, I love the entire world. I really do. I love going to so many diverse, different places with different people, different food. Oh, man. I mean, I've been to some cool places. I mean, Kathmandu, you know, was an amazing place.
All right. Pick one, Bob. Pick one.
God, man. I can't.
Okay. I will. Sydney, Australia is my favorite city in the world. Sorry. It is. I love it. I got nothing negative to say about Sydney, Australia. I love it. Brisbane's great, too. I love Australia, to be honest. And unfortunately, it's a place that we don't get to enough. Got some good friends down there. Summertime there is just, oh man, it's so good.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great place. God, man, there's so many good places. It's just, I know.
It's hard to pick just one.
Yeah.
All right. How did we meet? I was flying a trip at Allegiant. I was flying with this guy who was our former partner a while back in the jet test days. But he was captain. I was FO. We're flying an MD-80 along. And I was a new guy. I was like a new hire at Allegiant. And he was telling me stories about how he was going to Romania to ferry an MD-80. And I said, what? What's ferry? You know, what does that mean? And so he went down and he started telling me about his adventures around the world, ferrying planes with this guy named Bob. And I was like, man, that sounds awesome. And he and I had become pretty good friends at this point. So I actually later that evening, I went to his house and, you know, we're having some beers in the pool, just kind of chilling out. Like, we were paired together for the month. So we were flying together like every day. And then we were hanging out at night. I wasn't married yet. Like, you know, we're just like young guys hanging out. And he said, I think he had a few beers in him. And he goes, hey, do you want to go with on? He kind of talked like that too. Hey, you want to go with to Romania this weekend on this trip? I'm like, yeah, dude, of course I do. He goes, all right, I'll call Bob and I'll see if it's okay. And he did. And you said it was okay. So it was two airplanes. They were DC-9s.
DC-9s. Yep. These were they 10s?
DC-9s.
They were 30s.
30s. Yeah. And they were going to Romania for
Serbia.
Oh, Serbia. That's Serbia.
Belgrade.
Serbia. Okay. I got the place wrong. Similar.
Close.
And so I'm like, yeah, sure. So there was two airplanes. He was flying with another guy and I was to go fly to be, I guess I was going to be your co-pilot, Bob. And I didn't even see this, our friend, former friend. He just said, show up on Saturday in Phoenix. Bob will pick you up. I'm like, okay. Because the airplanes were staggered by a day. So I think he left Friday and like we were supposed to leave Saturday. So I went down to Phoenix and Bob picks me up from the airport. You had the red Jeep Cherokee back then.
Oh, yeah.
The license plate that said Avia Crew.
Yeah. CRU.
And I had never met this dude before, ever. You know, Bob was, you know, even as a young man, Bob was Bob. I was still Bob. We had a great time. He took me to his house. I slept over his house, met his wife. His kids were little. We smoked cigars and drank beers the night before. We hit it off real well. And then we just had a blast of a trip. And I remember when it was ending, actually we flew DC-9s out there and then we rode back on an A330 ferry.
Right. That
you weren't even A330 typed at that point.
No, I wasn't typed, but actually I don't, back then the FO didn't have to have.
Oh, that's right.
An SIC. So we were the SI, I hired a PIC. And then,
right.
Then we were the SICs.
Yeah. And so we rode back on that. I think we were gone a week and it was in retrospect, it seemed like it was like a month long because I was just soaking it in, man. Like everything about it. I had never flown, you know, over the pond, flying over Greenland and we landed in, you know, some Ireland or something. And it was awesome. And I was immediately hooked. And I remember leaving. I'm like, Bob, listen, man, I love this. I would love to do it again. Call me if you ever have any opportunities. And he started calling me. I guess he liked flying with me. So
yeah. Well, after that first trip, because I don't know if you remember the whole story, but we were flying. I was like, this guy's never going to, he's going to run away so fast after this trip.
So No way, man.
I was flying into, it was like midnight. We're going into Ypsilanti. I had to clear customs outbound to the U.S. in Ypsilanti. So I'm coming in. Ypsilanti Tower is closed. We're clicking on the lights and all of this stuff. I cannot find the runway for the life of me. Steve's like, it's right over there. And I'm coming around. I'm like, I can't see the runway, man. Finally get it. Come in, land. Go over to this little customs area. I think it had a circle painted on the ground and it's just pitch black, man. There's nobody out. I get on my phone and I call customs and the customs agent goes, oh yeah. He goes, I left Ypsilanti. I'm over at Detroit International now. I'm at DTW. You got to come over here. I was like, man, I can't come over there. You're supposed to be over here. I'm flying this airplane. I don't have like, we don't have air stairs. We might have, I don't know. But I'm like, I can't come over there. So he's like, I get in this argument with a guy. And make a long story short, I took off and left the United States without going to Detroit. And went over, we did our thing. You know, we were gone over there for about a week in Europe, end up in Zurich with this A330 that we fly to Lake Charles, Louisiana. Soon as we land in Lake Charles, Louisiana, there's this big customs agent down at the bottom of the stairs. And he yells up, he goes, "Is there a Robert Allen on board this airplane?" And I'm like, oh no. Uh-oh. I said, "Yes, sir, that's me." He goes, "Son, you need to come with me." I jumped in his car and he goes, "Boy, I don't know what you did up there in Detroit, but you're in a lot of trouble, son."
Oh my God. So I had no idea any of this was going on, by the way. I was such a deer in the headlights. Well, I had never flown a DC-9. I mean, I had a DC-9 type rating because I flew the MD-80, but I had never flown a DC-930. So I mean, it was hard enough, like, trying to wrap my head around that prehistoric cockpit. So while all this was going on, I was oblivious, man. I was a bad FO.
Yeah. Well, like... Like me back in those days, I was usually just throwing somebody in the seat that I was single pilot anyway, most of the time. So,
yeah,
but no, we had a great time. I really hit it off with you. I mean, we were just, I mean, you know,
yeah.
I mean, we were like brothers from the beginning, man. I mean, we thought the same way, had much the same philosophies of life and of aviation. And you were very entrepreneurial too. That's one thing, yeah. I did notice. I mean, you weren't, you didn't have any, like, you know, companies or anything at the time, but you were like talking about that the whole time. And
yeah, know, didn't I tried shortly after that, I tried, and you actually funded it. Like I had no money. I mean, I was like an FO at Allegiant, right? So I was like poor, and I had that idea to, yeah, like put advertising on like seat backs. That didn't happen. Like that ended up being a thing, but it wasn't a thing.
Right.
At that time.
Yeah. You were actually onto the right thing. It just,
we just
never could get it. I don't know, into the right hands or whatever.
Yeah. I think you spotted me like $5,000. And,
yeah.
And like, I went out and I had like mock-ups made. Like, I even made like a frame.
Yeah. Like, that would like mount onto the back of the seat and like,
yeah,
all the, like this, whatever the certification that was going to happen. I mean, yeah, it was like a real deal.
Yeah.
But again, technology just flew right by us. And next thing you know, yeah, they're putting videos in the back of the seats.
Yeah. That was a long time ago, man. There really wasn't videos at that point.
Right. But. Exactly.
All right. So that was a good one. Let's go to another question here. This one is from Vance. Vance, 119. Let's see what you got.
What's up, guys? Steve and Bob, I loved your podcast. The very first episode was awesome. Listened to the entire thing. I'm taking you up on this. So my question is, well, first off, Steve, as much as I love Bob, I think you're more of my kind of dude. I play a whole bunch of instruments as well. I'm actually a police officer and I'll get into my question here in a second, but I actually play multiple instruments as well. I grew up playing the piano, clarinet, saxophone, and now I play the bagpipes, play the guitar, write music, other stuff like that. But my name's Vance. I guess my question is this. So I'm transitioning out of being a police officer. I want to become a professional pilot. I'm 44 years old and I live down in Texas. I just finished my private pilot certificate, and that's awesome. I loved it. Took me a little bit longer than I wanted to, a little over a year. However, if y'all were in my shoes, what would be your path to get yourselves to a commercial level of flying as quickly as possible at the age of 44, coming from one career to another? That's my question. All right. Thanks, guys.
All right.
Yeah,
this,
cool,
is one we get a lot, and I'm glad that he asked it.
Yeah.
So we actually ironically have a friend who was a police officer in San Diego and became a pilot at somewhere around 44. I mean, I don't know. It might've been 40. It might've been 50, but
yeah.
Fred.
Yeah.
Yeah, Fred.
Cool dude.
Cool dude. In fact, remember that footage of the tank that was driving down the street
in Los Angeles San Diego?
Yeah. Someone stole a tank from like a National Guard armory and like drove it down like the city street. I don't know if it was in the 90s, maybe.
Yeah.
And he, Fred, was the officer like on the scene for that. And he's like in the film. Like he was the guy like pursuing
jumping on
the
tank.
Yeah.
Oh man.
So yeah. All right, 44. So airline retirement age is 65. So you got some time, honestly. You know, you're not going to have a 25 year airline career, but I mean, yeah. I didn't either.
Yeah. Well, did he mention that that's the direction that he wanted to go, or just a pilot career?
Just a pilot career. So, I mean, there's definitely, first of all, there's pilot jobs in law enforcement.
Yeah.
Like a ton of them.
Lots of them,
whether fixed wing, you know, I don't know, you would know better than me, Vance, like, you know, maybe if your department doesn't have an air unit like that, there are police departments that do have these air units. And I know a couple of guys that became pilots, fixed wing and helicopter, and were paid to train by the department because they had that interest. And I think they started out with a private or something like that. So definitely look into that. That could be, if nothing else, that could be a way to get the licenses and ratings.
Yeah. Yeah. I leased out an MD-82 to a sheriff's department that was doing that. They were taking their low time guys, getting them time on 182 so that they could, you know, go into the larger equipment and, get more time for insurance. But the other thing is federal departments also like to hire, you know, the Leos.
With law enforcement backgrounds. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
So that's definitely an option. If airlines are, you know, are your choice, or, I mean, private biz jets, things like that, you could even do to, at an older age, you know, until an older age. But you're certainly not too old to get started. And realistically, I mean, it depends how often you've got to fly. I mean, you could be commercial multi-engine pilot in a year and a half from now, right? I mean, you're not going to have an ATP yet because you're not going to have the time for an ATP, but you can start working professionally, whether that be as a CFI or towing banners or doing something in law enforcement. Or, I mean, there's different gigs out there that you can get to build time, right seat in a biz jet, something like that.
That matter, like NetJets and those companies love to hire people that are like that age because they're not going to go to the airlines.
Right. That's another thing. Like companies that are looking to recruit pilots, sometimes they like, it's kind of a sweet spot age, mid-40s, even late 40s, because you're not going to bounce and go someplace else. Right. And that's perceived as value to the airlines. So if you're, I mean, I would assume, you know, you have a full-time job and so you're not going to be able to get it all done in a year and a half. But I think that realistically flying a couple days a week, 2-3, 4 days a week, could get there in 3, certainly, and within 5 have the ATP. How do you get there? Well, I mean, I would go Part 61 school all the way. It's hard to do a structured 141 program with a job. I feel like it's tailored for like the younger guys that are like wanting like a structured program. And my son's in one right now. I could tell you at 48, I wouldn't want to do that. I would rather kind of do it one-on-one with an instructor. Another thing is you're gainfully employed and making a good living as a law enforcement officer. It would probably be a good move to pick up a cheap trainer airplane that's instrument capable. We have a Cherokee 140. Bob and I bought it. It's a nomadic asset. My kids are training on it. Bob's kids want, you know, if his daughter wants to train on it, she can. You know, you're looking at like $100,000, which you'll get back when you sell. Like they don't depreciate anymore. So yeah, you can get a $100,000 airplane. Make sure that it's something that you can use as an instrument trainer, something that is IFR capable. So whether that be a Cherokee, a Warrior, you know, PA-28/161, or a Cherokee 140 like ours, a Cherokee 180, a Dakota, a Cessna 172. Really anything, but there's no need to get complex. Like get a simple trainer that's a good instrument trainer. You'll spend $100,000 on it now and you will literally sell it for either the same or a profit in 2 or 3 years. Use it to build time. As a 44-year-old, that's the cheat code.
Yeah, exactly. That's the way to go. I mean, especially if you can find a local instructor that's going to stick with you through the private, commercial, and instrument. Yeah, I mean, you know, then you got the same guy, and you save a lot of time and money and frustration if you can, you know, have just one or two instructors.
BYOP, bring your own plane. Now let's move on to the next one because we're not getting through these very...
We never do.
Now, I'm just randomly grabbing them, man.
Let's see.
We got
this
Jude.
One. Hey, Jude.
Hey, Bob. Hey, Steve. Super happy that you guys are doing this podcast. Super happy to add it to my weekly listening on the way to school or work and whatnot. Got a question for you. Mostly for you, Steve, but Bob, if you want to pitch in, that'd be great. Heard you talk in the first couple episodes, Steve, about golf. I gotta ask, man, what's the handicap? Not an aviation question, but just thought I'd throw that one out there. Appreciate you guys. Super happy that you're doing the podcast. Can't wait to listen to more. Thanks, guys.
That was not a video. Jude, my handicap is nothing to brag about, man, sadly. So let me put a disclaimer out there. So I had shoulder surgery in December, so I have not played any golf since then. And for about 6 months prior to that, I was in a lot of pain, so my game was crap. But ordinarily, I'm about a 12, you know.
Even like, having a golf simulator in your basement?
Dude, a 12 is pretty good. I mean, it's not Aaron Van Arsdale, but it's good.
Yeah, but it's a lot better than mine because I don't even have one because I'm so bad. I don't even try to track it.
My progression was once I started tracking handicap, I was at around an 18, and then like I kind of hovered around like a 16, and I really worked on my short game, and I was able to get it to like about a 12. I'm probably going to be like probably more like a 15 to 18 when I get back into it here in another month. My PT told me today that I'll be golfing within a month, and I hope. I don't know. I'm in a lot of pain today, so I'm not sure.
Don't screw it up.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't have a very far drive. I'm a short game guy, man. I mean, I could drive it 250 yards, but not now. But I don't. If I go for distance, I put it in the woods.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'd rather. Yeah, I mean, I slice it, but not so much. That's not really my problem. For me, it's the shot. Like, I don't have a strategy. Like, I don't, man, I'm going off track here. But when I play golf with a guy who's really good, like Aaron.
Yeah.
When I golf with Ava, he's like, hit it over there, because then you're going to have a night, you know, set up your second shot, you know, kind of hit it out to the right. And I don't know.
It's like anything else. That's what you always get better if you play with better people, you know?
Yeah, I always play way better when I'm with him.
Yeah.
Because he gives me pointers the whole time. All right, we're not going to bore everybody to death with golf. I'm good enough to play with clients and stuff and not look like a fool. But like, you know, if I play with anybody, I'm never playing for money.
Or with Tiger Woods. Oh, well, maybe that's a bad guy to bring up right now. Never mind.
Stop getting in the car with him. I'll play golf with him. The next question here.
Hey guys, love the content. Thanks for the opportunity to ask a question. Number one, Bob, would you like to invest in a unique opportunity in crypto? Just kidding. And then number two is, with all the experience you guys have, I'm sure it takes quite a bit to get you frightened. Can you talk about an emergency situation you've had in the air that was frightening? Maybe tell the story. I'm sure we'd all love to hear it.
Bob, we were together, I'm pretty sure.
Well,
he asked you, so I'll let you pick.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I've ever been scared with you. I mean, I don't know if I've ever been scared in an airplane.
The time in the DC-9 where we had to land in with the landing gear hanging out?
Nah, that was just concerning. That was like...
Dude, I mean, at one point, I didn't know that we'd have the gas and we were over the Western Sahara.
Yeah, I mean, we almost ran out of gas for sure. But I mean, we calculated it down to having like, what, 400 pounds left or something?
In a DC-930 over... the Western Sahara
in the middle of the night.
In the middle of the night with a landing gear that like an uplatch broke and it dropped into the slipstream and we couldn't maintain altitude. So we had to descend down to like 18 to where the air. And so now we're burning more gas. And there's nowhere to divert to there. There's nowhere to divert to.
There was absolutely nowhere. We had actual charts out. Pay flashlights. Yeah. Trying to find airports.
This is like 05, 06.
Yeah. It was bad. I mean, it was like, well, I mean, I think we got enough to make it. As long as it's not water in the bottom of those tanks and it's actually gas, we're gonna make it.
Well, maybe you weren't scared. I was scared shitless.
Nah, I figured we were gonna make it. I mean, look, the only time I actually thought I was gonna die was taking the MD-80 out of Kinshasa. and it was an airplane. I should have never gotten the airplane. The emergency standby power was not working. The transponder head was missing, as were many parts of the airplane had been stolen off the airplane. I was repossessing this thing out of Kinshasa, trying to get it to Texas. It was a mess. The standby attitude indicator, the battery was dead. It was just spinning. I had basic instruments. Anyway, I was supposed to take off that morning. Like everything else with ferry work, we didn't take off until the sun starts setting. Thunderstorms all over the place. The radar wasn't working. I should have never taken off with this airplane. This was back in probably, I don't know, 04, 05, maybe 06. I can't remember. But when I was very young and bold and brave and stupid, took off. I'm flying out of Kinshasa. I'm heading north to I think Lome, somewhere up near Nigeria. So I started heading up. I go into some clouds. Like I say, the radar is not working. I started getting bounced around. So one other thing about this flight is I had one engine-driven generator and I had the APU generator. The number two generator was in op. So I had two generators, but I had to keep the APU going. Going through about 14, 15,000 feet, I'm in this small cell. I'm getting bounced around. It's raining. And I'm hoping it's not going to get any worse because the radar is not working. Well, at about 16,000 feet, the APU winds down. It shuts off. And when that happened, the autopilot clicked off, and so did the other generator, the engine-driven generator. Everything popped off, and I had no power whatsoever. I lost all electricity. I lost all my instruments and my IFR. So I immediately try to get the generators back online. I'm trying to reset those. Nothing is happening. Trying to restart the APU. Nothing is happening. The autopilot's off. And I'm just basically letting the airplane fly on its own. It was going up at about 1,500 feet a minute when it turned off. So I'm hoping that it just keeps continuing that and doesn't turn into a bank or get slow or get too fast. Anyway, I don't know how long it was. But I'm sitting there and I cannot get any instruments working. And I'm not sure if the airplane is flying straight and level or climbing or turning. And I start thinking about, should I even attempt to try to do something? Again, I'm like, I'm not going to touch the airplane. But I'm starting to kind of like feel the vertigo. Feel the seat of the pants, and I start thinking, man, this is going to turn out bad. I'm eventually either going to get too slow and it's going to roll over and I'm going to crash, or I'm going to get into a high speed dive, or it's just going to roll over. I have no idea. And all this is going through my head, and I'm thinking I'm probably going to die. I cannot get anything back on, turn the battery switch on and off. I'm just banging on stuff. I'm hitting the overhead. I'm hitting the GCUs. I'm doing everything that I can to try to get power. Nothing is happening. And I figured at that moment, I'm probably going to die. I'm going to end up in a hole in Africa and nobody's going to have any idea what happened to me. And this is how it ends. And I wasn't scared, but I was really angry. I was so pissed off at myself for getting myself in that situation and ending my life this way. And about that time, I thought I was like navigating with a Garmin GPS, that little black and white GPS. And it had a GPS ground speed and sort of this wing level thing. And I thought about that page, and I pulled up that Garmin and I pulled it. And I could see that I still had a rate of climb and that my airspeed wasn't slow or excessive. So I couldn't tell if I was in a bank or not, other than the heading was drifting. And I just sat there and stared at that thing for I don't know how long. And I eventually blew out the side of the cell, and the sun was in my face. I had turned probably 90 degrees from like north to due west, and I'm seeing the sun, and I'm thinking, man, there is a God. Thank you, God.
The fairy gods came through.
Exactly.
And so, then you continued across the ocean with nothing.
Yeah. No, yeah. Well, this is true. I actually made it to Texas in that condition.
My God. I might have to cut that whole thing.
Yeah, I know. This was a long time ago. Statute of limitations are over. I was a young fool. But
all right. Let's do one more, man. We're running out of time.
All right.
Hey, Steve. Hey, Bob. This is Maurice from Southern Germany. Just listen to the latest podcast episode. And when you were talking to Pat about his type ratings, you mentioned A330, but not A350. As far as I know, that's a combined rating. Is there some specifics in the Part 91 world or in your operations that made you not mention A350? Or is there actually some difference in training that Pat just didn't do yet to ferry or to fly A350s? Would love your insight on that topic. And thanks for the podcast.
So the A350 and A330 are only common in Europe. They're only a common type in EASA. I don't know why. It's extremely annoying. Well, I mean, I don't fly the A350, so I don't know. Maybe there's a reason. In the United States, it is not a common type. So the A350 is a completely different type rating that you have to get. And right now, there are no Part 91 programs to get an A350 type in the United States, which is why Bob and I are not typed in the A350. And we fly the A330, 330neo, no problems there. But in EASA, it's considered common. In the United States, it is not that simple.
Yeah. And I don't know. We probably won't see any 350s for quite a few years, honestly.
Yeah, we barely see 7.8s. I mean, they come across, but it's about 10 to 12 years before the first leases start ending, and that's when we start seeing them.
Yeah.
So, all right, let's do one more, and then we'll call it.
Hi, guys. Absolutely love the content. Aside from the amazing soundtrack, the thing I'm really interested in is what it feels like to fly an empty aeroplane. I'm an older guy. I've been on a lot of planes, but only twice when it's been empty. The first, when I was a kid flying out of Central Africa to Europe in the 1970s, and only again at the height of the global financial crisis in early 2009 when I found myself on an empty Qantas flight one night flying across the country. So for mere mortals like me, a very rare and surreal experience. But for you guys, another day at the office. What does that feel like? Emotionally, subjectively, physically? How does it affect the physics, the aerodynamics, the flight planning and the fuel management? I'd imagine an aeroplane with only two guys and a pizza on board goes a little bit further. Anyway, I'd love to know more. Ciao.
You know,
I love it. That was a great one.
Yeah, totally. You know, they're definitely more efficient because they're lighter than a full aeroplane.
So the only downside to an empty airplane is that it's harder to get a good landing out of a light airplane than out of a heavy airplane. And I wouldn't even remember what it's like to land a heavy airplane at this point, because my last flight flying passengers for an airline was in 2014. So, you know, that was 12 years ago now. But I do know that there was, and I've gotten so used to landing light airplanes that either that or they're just all bad. But I don't know exactly which is the, but a light airplane is hard to land. They float and then they drop. It's really hard to hit your mark if you're not doing it very often. It's also really hard to get a soft touchdown on a light airplane. Other than that, everything else about it is awesome. We don't step climb very often. I mean, yeah, in an A340, 300, we got to step climb. You know, in a 7-8, you got to step climb to get up, you know, above like 43. But 7-5, 7-6, A320, 7-3, even full tanks, we can pretty much get right up to max cruise every time immediately. So that is fantastic. The takeoff performance is, I mean, whenever we fly out of Goodyear, we generally fuel stop in Phoenix because the fuel's half the cost. And we flew a 757 freighter, which is lighter than a regular 75, with RB211s, with 10,000 pounds of fuel on board, and just me and Bob and a pizza. Well, not a pizza yet, but a case of water. And it's, you rotate and you're going through 1,000 feet before you can blink. And
yeah,
you have to level off real quick. I mean, you have to like fight the airplane. And a 75, empty 75, you got to fight the airplane to make a 2,000 foot level off or a 3,000 foot level off. And it's a struggle, man. You rotate and you're like positive rate gear up and you're like, holy moly, I'm blowing. Like, you got to push it down to not blow through the altitude. That's how aggressively a light 7.5 will climb.
Yeah.
7.6 does the same thing.
Yeah. You gotta be very aggressive with the flight controls, with the attitude, pushing it over to level it off and pulling back the power. I mean, it's a lot of momentum going up in one direction that you have to change in a short amount of time.
Yep.
But, I don't know. I mean, I think the coolest thing is just walking around the back of the airplanes while we're flying. Although yeah. It's kind of creepy at night and some, like, especially in the wide bodies where you go way back there and it's dark and there's just nothing back there. But I don't know. Then some of the people we picked airplanes up from tell us the airplanes are haunted.
Yeah, I've heard that a couple times.
So I start like getting kind of creeped out and I'm like, start seeing stuff behind corners or sitting in seats and galleys. My imagination starts going crazy.
Back in the days when I smoked, I used to go in the galley in the back and smoke cigarettes the whole time.
Yeah, so you just get up and walk around, stretch your legs, you know, go back there and eat, whatever. I mean,
take off your clothes.
Yeah, you could. You do whatever you want. I mean, change clothes, yeah. Whatever. Yeah,
take a nappy wipe shower after like days on the road. You go back there and you wash yourself up with handy wipes or whatever.
Well, you know, I mean, just from the people talk about the fatigue thing, it's very helpful to be able to get up and walk around and to, like, you know, wipe your face off and stuff and even change clothes, and you kind of come back like 100% and you're good for several more hours again.
We pulled the circuit breakers on the cockpit door as soon as we get on an airplane. Like, we don't want any, I mean, obviously, we're never both exiting the cockpit in flight, but we do both exit the cockpit on the ground. And, you know, you don't want to be in a situation where you lock yourself out of the cockpit.
No.
Yeah, even on the ground, you know, because then you're going to be struggling to get back in. And so the door's always open. We prop it open. We secure it open in a lot of cases. And it's just, the whole tube is our domain, you know, so it's really nice. I love flying empty airplanes. Yeah. I mean, it's just great. And once you get used to landing them,
yeah, it's, I would hate to fly passengers.
Yeah, me too. Or cargo.
Or car, anything.
But it's, like, the heavy airplanes that we fly, I mean, even, it's funny, like, you know, even on a 777, the passenger weight, the payload is nothing comparatively to the weight of the fuel that the thing carries, yeah. Right? So we're not light. Like, when we take off with a full 777 or 330, I mean, the airplane's
yeah, we're
still
taking
heavy.
Off heavy, you know, a lot of times.
But we're not landing heavy ever. And if we are, there's something wrong.
Yeah.
Well, I look, these are great questions. We got through some of them, not all of them. Keep sending them in, guys. We'll keep trying to pound through them as we get them. I think we're going to make the deadline and get episode 6 out this week. I hope you enjoyed it. And we'll be back next week. I don't know what we have in store yet. I think we might have a guest next week. I will look into that and enjoy the pod. Check out cockpitcasual.com. Also, check out the YouTube video of this, because there is a little mini Cockpit Casual in the beginning.
Yeah, that's going to be cool. I'm looking forward to seeing it myself.
All right. Have a good weekend, and we'll see you next week.